Welcome back to another episode of Franchise Euphoria. Josh Brown here, and as a franchise lawyer, I get to spend my days helping people with their franchise legal needs. But on this show, I get to talk with people in and around the franchise world and learn from their perspective and their experiences, and also share some of my own. Enjoy! Hey, welcome back to Franchise Euphoria. Thrilled to have Chris Stoness with me, who is the CEO of Elite Window Cleaning out of Canada, and then also Sparkle Squad here in the U.S. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing wonderful. I'm doing even better now that we've managed to get together for this. So thanks so much.
It's taken a couple of tries, hasn't it? Right? I mean, I find with busy people, me being one of them, you being one of them, and doing a lot of stuff that, like, you know, it takes a rescheduling or two to make it happen.
We always get there though.
We get there. Well, tell me, so right out of the gate, Elite Window and Sparkle, they're both part of the Happiness brands, right?
You got it. Yep.
Yeah. And I had a great interview with Eric Martin from Happiness Brand back in, I think, November 3rd, 2023, on this podcast. So that was fun. I think he introduced us
to each other. Yes. Eric is.
Said you'd be a great guest. So there's a lot of pressure on you.
A lot of pressure. Well, I mean, those are big shoes to follow. He's an amazing person and an incredible speaker. So I'll do my best to follow his lead.
Well, you've got a cool story. So let's just kind of start from there. You had another, you know, you had a previous career, and then, you know, you found your way to the window cleaning genre. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. Genre is an interesting word to use, because my previous career was in the music industry. So I guess if we go way back, I'd spent really most of my life trying to break into arguably one of the hardest industries in the world to break into, especially in the vertical that I was focused on, which was sound engineering. And so I had worked really, really hard to kind of get to this end state of being this professional sound engineer through really most of my life. And I managed to do it through a ton of grit, through a ton of effort, and just never giving up. I reached the pinnacle of the industry and was working with Grammy winning records and artists that, you know, everyone would know their name. And I found myself at a really interesting inflection point.
So, like, were you like working in studio with them? You're working in studio.
Yeah, I got to work in studio, you know, turning dials and pushing faders for bands like AC/DC, or solo artists like Shakira, like huge names.
Nice.
It was really cool, and it taught me a really tough lesson really young. I was in my early 20s at the time, and what it taught me was, if you're not aware of the end state, the journey can be all the fun. And for me, what it was I had a visual of what I wanted this job to be, but what I actually loved was all the micro achievements that lead to achieving a crazy goal. And it was that climb or that ascension that I was so enthusiastic about the whole time. I wasn't even thinking about the end state. And then I got there, and it was a great job, and it was kind of everything I had hoped it would be, but it was lacking the challenge that I had come to love. It was lacking any further ascension. And
you're a grinder, man. You love the journey's the reward, right?
Exactly.
You know, that's a famous quote. I don't know if that was Steve Jobs or one of them, but essentially, yeah. I mean, it's the pursuit that captivates you.
That was exactly it. And thankfully, in retrospect, in my early 20s, I had the self-awareness to change course, and I really just left that very open to the world, I guess. Like, I was on one hand very devastated and one hand very optimistic, and window cleaning just kind of came into my spectrum as something to pay my rent with. I had given up my source of income. So I decided that this industry seemed so vast, and it was outside, and it wasn't like crazy manual labor, and there was an instant gratification factor that I really liked, because you can kind of transform something really, really quickly over and over again. And I started in the industry in, late 2005, early 2006. And I just loved it. I just saw opportunity everywhere I looked. And I thought, you know what, like, if I can put the level of dedication that I put to the music industry, where there's millions of people putting that level of dedication, I might be the most dedicated person in this niche industry if I just take the same approach. And so I did. I traveled around. I worked for a bunch of different companies across North America, all as far as Australia, to learn as much as I could so that I could start something for myself and be the best in the world at it. And in 2012, I moved back to my hometown here in Kingston, Ontario, and I started Elite Window Cleaning literally with a borrowed car, a bucket, and a whole bunch of knowledge that I had amassed over a couple of years of traveling and working in different environments. And my entire goal from day one was to be the person that outworked everyone else in the industry when it came to how they thought about the industry. So I couldn't be the fastest window cleaner in the world, but I could think about the industry in a way that no one else was. I could cast a broader view, I guess. So we developed technology over the early years that allow us to wash up to six stories from the ground, which was absolutely unheard of, and guarantee.
How do you do that? Tell me about that.
So we built a tech around purifying water and using telescopic poles. So the short version of it is, if you were to scrub your windows and rinse them off with the hose, you would get all the dirt off your windows, but as the water evaporated off, all the minerals from the water would leave spots.
Yeah, you just see spots everywhere. You see spots everywhere. Worse or so as bad.
We you know, had the hypothesis, and it had been done in the UK, that if we removed the minerals from the water, then we wouldn't have spots left behind. And we took some time to figure out the water table in North America, and, you know, did that correlate to the same filtration processes that they were using in the UK? And we came out with a system that guarantees results in half the time of climbing a ladder and squeegeeing and mopping off a window, but also like increased the safety like crazy. So we were more appealing from a safety standpoint to our clients, but we were also doing it in half the time. So we could actually nudge our margin compared to our competitors and come in less expensive for the end user. So we'd kind of cracked this code. And we wanted to do two things. We wanted to rewrite the way that the window cleaning was purchased in North America. It's still seen this way outside of our customers, which is such a cool edge to have right now, given that everything else is so technologically advanced. Is you know, the process really traditionally is call the window cleaner, he comes, he gives you a quote, or she comes and gives you a quote. You determine on a price, they go back and they come back another day to execute the work. But because we'd applied this technology, it allowed us to flat rate our business. So we could quote based on square footage, and we could convert people right on that first call. Because
oh, really? You don't even do it by the hour.
No, it's by the square footage of the home, because our technology allowed us to normalize things so easily. So we have four price brackets and just a flat rate price for every for these four discrete house sizes. And when we were able to do that, what we realized, which should have been abundantly obvious all along, was nobody calls the window cleaner who doesn't want to buy window cleaning. So our conversions in the call center we built shot up to 80% of all incoming calls were booking, because we were able to give them the price, land in their perceived value band, and then give them a date. And once we'd kind of cracked that, it was like, how are we going to share this with the world? And franchising was, you know, the only logical aligned, I guess it was the only one that aligned with who I am as a person. Like if we go all the way back to why I was successful in the window cleaning industry, in the music industry, it was because I loved that climb. And in franchising, it gave me the opportunity to climb with others constantly, perpetually, meeting new owners, you know, onboarding them into the business, and then growing their business beyond what they really thought was possible is truly the most rewarding job that you could have. And it really aligned with who I am as a person. So we got into franchising in 2018, really began aggressively expanding in Canada. As soon as we saw that this works in every market we placed it in, the need was there, the price structure, you know, was there, the customers reacted in the same way. We kind of felt like we had lightning in a bottle for a few years and we didn't know how to get it out. And that was when Happy Nest Brands entered the picture, and they saw the same vision that we'd seen, and they had done it with other home service brands. They saw the technological advantage and they said, I think this is a really good partnership. And the interesting part about Happy Nest Brands is we had turned down so many acquisitions up until that meeting. I remember the call. I was sitting in this chair when I spoke to Scott Frith, who's the chairman at Happy Nest. And he said two things to me that resonated to my core and still to this day kind of guide our whole combined future. Is he said, you know, I was asking all these questions because I was so green to franchising at the time. And, you know, I had all these questions for this. I got this guy's attention. How can I, you know, get value beyond just showing him the cool things we're doing? And he said, Chris, there's really two things that matter in franchising. It's franchisee-franchisor relationships and unit economics. So that is it. If you have those two things, everything else goes down in volume. And when I thought about it, it was so true. The way they looked at, you know, it's a relationship business and the economics need to stand up and really nothing else matters. And I knew when he finished that sentence that our future was written. We were going to go through this process and join with Happy Nest Brands. And
well, I mean, let's pause on there for a second, because I think those are good points. I mean, the relationship between franchisees and franchisors, it's ever evolving. It's always evolving. And, you know, I think I always tell people there's clear value at the start of the relationship, or at least there should be, you know, because they're coming to you, they're interested in your brand for some reason. Maybe they were told about it by somebody. Maybe they heard you on an interview, you know, maybe they heard, you know, learned about the brand. They liked you, whatever the case may be, but they're coming to you because they don't want to create something from scratch themselves. And they're going to learn the quote secret sauce, you know, through that purchase. And so that to me is the easy side of that relationship. And of course, you know, the more clarity you have as a franchisor on who you're looking to bring onto that bus and what kind of attributes they have, the better it usually is. But then there's a second and more long-term component to that is the whole, what have you done for me lately? That, you know, franchisees, you know, and I think it's fair that after they've been a part of the system for a while, they've learned it. Well, Chris, they don't need you and your team to tell them how to, you know, set up appointments and go through, you know, the customer service aspects or the technical side of the job.
Right.
What they need is, what have you done for me lately in terms of what's the value that your franchise system is offering me a year down the road, 2 years down the road, 3 years. And so if you can figure that piece out, both those pieces, that goes a real long way for franchise relationships. What do you think about that?
I think you're absolutely spot on. There's two things that I think tie into the way that we look at that. And one of them is kind of who I am as a person and having the luxury of building this inside an echo chamber without a ton of influence until we had really built it, gave me this naivety that I think serves us and all our franchise owners really well and how we looked at it. So the way that we think about it is we try to meet franchise owners where they are, and we use revenue as, you know, what defines where they are in the life cycle of their business. We don't use time, because what you see when you stack a bunch of franchise owners side by side is personality shines through in that time horizon. And it's really hard to meet somebody where they are on year three, if they're doing, you know, 700,000 versus somebody who's doing 450,000 in year three, they're not playing the same game. So we've broken our entire coaching down to meeting franchise owners. Actually, I'm going to say this in a different way. Because I built this in an echo chamber, we are a founder-led franchise, which means And we still run a corporate location today to stress test all, you know, we eat our own dog food because it's so, so important.
Test things out, make sure things are working. Doing
and
all
continue
that.
To prove out, you know, the existing model. So I've seen every dollar from dollar one to, you know, multi seven figures flowing through this business. And so we took that, that learning, and most of my team has been here at least 5 years on the short end for our leadership team. And we broke it down into what did it feel like between dollar one and 200,000? And then what did it feel like between 200,000 and half a million? And then what did it feel like between half a million and 750 and so on and so forth? And we actually built these coaching brackets. So our franchise business advisors meet owners in their shoes. We go, our coaching curriculum, you know, what have you done for me lately? Our coaching curriculum is dialed exactly to whatever revenue bracket you're in. How do we get you through that and into the next one as quick as possible? What are the areas of focus that are most important? Is it, you know, building capacity through staff? Is it in reinvesting into a big PR campaign because you're trying to break that seven figure ceiling? There's all these things that only apply at certain stages. So rather than coach owners on this is how to build a multi-million dollar window cleaning business, here's one playbook, we break it down into here's this chunk so that you can get to the next chunk. Here's this chunk so you can go, and so on and so forth. And I find that, you know, from my experience, again, I'm only speaking from my experience, is when you're coaching people to where they are, everything is far less ethereal. It is more tactical. It is more relatable. They're able to really understand, hey, here I am today. Not only do I, you know, do I see from my coach what I need and it's proven out through the model and through the corporate location, but also I see what the next step looks like and I can prepare for that. So we're kind of always trying to stay one step ahead of that growth curve. So I would say, like, you're spot on, and a model should deliver value all the way up the value chain. I think that if a franchise system were built around, you know, the initial branding and the initial launch and how to convert clients, you're going to drive straight into a dissatisfaction at some level of revenue or some level of contribution. So we're always trying to get owners, find out, figure out where they are, what their needs are, triage them. And, you know, what's 1 year out look like for you? Where do you want to be in a year's time? And let's focus deeply on that.
Well, and technology is important too, because, you know, the technological side and, you know, part of the franchise system is you licensing the use of that technology to them. And as you continue to improve upon that, you know, and I'm sure with your business too, there's probably scheduling, you know, software tons, and coordination and, and all that. Tell me, so Elite Window Cleaning Canada, Sparkle Squad US.
Yeah.
Why the two?
Why the two? It's such a good question. I spent 12 years building this system and creating and molding the clay. And at points in that journey, I molded clay that really was permanent, like the name Elite Window Cleaning, which I came up in an Australian hotel room and made the logo in MS Paint. It's very penetrated in Canada as kind of the premier window cleaning operation in the country. But we had the opportunity to reset the stakes in the United States and go, okay, if given everything we know, 12 years of learning, we can start at square one and implement all of that on day one. And that's really was, you know, the genesis of the Sparkle Squad brand was, how do we build the best brand in the category and start with that? And then how do we take all these systems and learnings and equipment and technology from the Elite system and run that through the mill again, and then build out the job pod, which is what we call our service vehicles, to truly be the best on the planet. Like it was, again, I come back to that, you know, constant climb or that constant ascension. It was an opportunity to go into the most franchise friendly country in the world and really put our best foot forward in every conceivable way.
Well, that's interesting, because I didn't know if it had anything to do with like a trademark issue, or, you know,
it came down to like, what is the best opportunity if you could start a new brand, knowing everything you know today, 12 years of experience, still running Elite Window Cleaning, what does that look like? And it came down to, I believe that this is the best opportunity globally in the category.
Now, see, that's a giveaway to me. If nobody knows what I do, they would know from that statement I just made that I'm a lawyer. Because of course I'm thinking about, well, maybe it's a different name because they couldn't get the trademark legally to go through or whatnot. That makes sense, though. You know, you're right. I mean, U.S. is the most friendly a place for franchising. I'm curious, how's the competition been for you guys here? I mean, there's, you know. I won't name the others on this podcast just out of fairness to you guys, but there's a decent amount of other competition out there.
There is. Yeah. There are competitors. I've never really looked at competition other than what it is it's like an opportunity to put your best foot forward and just do what you do. You know, I'm not a look over my shoulder kind of guy. But when we came into the United States, we are doing things very differently from the execution side, with the technology, with the flat rate, with our customer acquisition strategy, with our online booking engine. We're taking a different approach than maybe historically has been the norm in the industry. And our play is to bring in amazing owners and just continue doing what we're doing. So I think that there's lots of windows to go around. And I don't wish, you know,
I don't think you're going to run out of windows, Chris. So, I don't think. Yeah. I heard you on another interview briefly, as you know, I was preparing for this, where you said something I thought was interesting and funny and spot on, which was, you said something, the fact of, you know, being involved in this business, and it's like one of those businesses that nobody ever thinks about, but mm-hmm. yet at the same time, all day long, we're all looking through windows.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so they have to be clean.
It is so true. It is an incredibly under the radar, especially in the commercial side of things. Like, there is just so much glass out there, and the industry of maintaining it is just not caught up to the modern world. So what we really focused on was, how do we take this, not just the client acquisition, not just the online booking engine, not just the marketing, but take the whole package of running a really successful window cleaning operation and do it in a way that people can build empires. You mentioned earlier, getting clear on your avatar of who the owner is critical. And I would say over the last couple of years, that has been one of the biggest learnings of my recent career, was really understanding the type of owner who gets this and wants to turn it into, we call them empire builders. That's why, you know, I used that term a second ago, is we've defined the type of person that can take the systems and the model and see the opportunity for what it is and really grow a disproportionate market share, because most of the competitors are ma and pa's, and the franchise systems that exist are coming at it from different discrete angles. And, you know, our angle is really, really to go into two verticals at the same time, commercial and residential.
I was just going to ask you, are you doing commercial too? So you got commercial side.
Yeah. So we really focus on two discrete lanes. You know, your residential is, you get in, it's the low hanging fruit. You know, you turn on the ads, you do the ground game, you do a big marketing blitz, and it kind of turns on the faucet. And then you're running on that residential, you're getting cash flow positive because those jobs pay every day, right? Like, you're just, you know, plowing through residential jobs, and then you're building this flywheel of commercial activity. So we focus on things like retirement homes and hospitals and, you know, multi-unit residential complexes. And it's a little bit of a longer gestation period. So our owners are moving through these residential clients, cash flowing off those, but building this really stable, large base in the commercial vertical. And we have a really prescriptive way, because if you're really careful about it and you really design the business composition, again, back to each of those stages, we actually coach to a different ratio, commercial to residential, in each of those brackets where we're meeting the owners where they are. And you can build an incredibly, incredibly sustainable business.
Commercial, you're getting repeat probably every couple of weeks, every month, whatever it is, depending on the time of year, I would say.
Yeah, it depends on the scope of the project. So, you know, there's the largest one we do is a university with over 70,000 panes of glass in and out once a year. It takes 3 months to complete the project.
Oh, wow.
And then you have your burrito stand that you do every Monday at 10 a.m. and it takes you 5 minutes. So it's like there's a whole kind of complexity to how we stack these, but we kind of walk our owners through it in a way that when they get to that university bid, they're ready for it. And because we've built them up all along the way.
Where are you in the U.S.? Where are your locations? I mean, what states?
Right now, we actually have our first sold out Discovery Day next Friday. We are brand new to the U.S. So we are.
You're brand new.
100% white space.
So where are you going? Where are these people coming in from for Discovery Day?
I think next week we have three on the Eastern Seaboard, kind of one Midwest. Really, this business was built in a northern market because it was built in Canada. The economics were built around that seasonality. So the further south you go, the longer you can extend and the bigger the win you get, like the more workable weeks you have every season. But it's really designed for an empire builder to be in, you know, Michigan or these northern markets that have more intense weather. So our Discovery Day next week is from, you know, all walks and shapes and sizes and states. And it's really exciting to take 12 years and then to go into the United States with 100% white space is like, I feel like I'm just the luckiest person.
Well, you got a blank canvas. You can now paint.
And we can choose the best owners without having to worry about restrictions based on availability. That's been the coolest part is the great people that have come through have really been like, it's available to them. And that's the part that's been really, really fun.
Now in our remaining time, because by the way, it's fun talking to you. I can tell you're passionate about it and energized, and that's great. The second thing that we mentioned way back at the start of the interview was the unit economics being that second thing that really is super important to successful franchising. I don't need you to get into the numbers because if somebody wants to know the numbers, I presume you have
we can get to the process and go through we can get there.
But generally speaking, let's talk a little bit for those who are listening who, you know, are interested about unit economics. You're right. That's a super, super important thing on a number of different levels. So from my perspective, number one, you've got your per unit economics. You know, what can you do with each location? Mm-hmm. And then number two, you look at it as a multiple for multi-unit operators.
Yep.
I'm of the mindset, and I've been in franchise world as a lawyer for almost 18 years now. I'm of the mindset that there's very few franchise opportunities where having just one unit is the ideal thing. Mm-hmm. In other words, you can be fine. You can have a business, whatever. But ideally, I think these franchisees, most of them, are looking for an opportunity. You use the word empire builders. Mm-hmm. They're not just looking to go buy themselves a job in some small territory. They want to grow it, just like you want to grow the system.
Yeah.
In terms of with, you know, Sparkle Squad or with Elite, what's your ideal? I mean, are you guys looking for multi-unit operators? Do you start them off with one to make sure they kind of get the foundation and then grow from there? Or how do you do that?
There's a couple of interesting takes that we took on this, again, from my experience being very siloed off in this echo chamber of building it. We've carved our territories around seven-figure opportunity, first and foremost. It is one territory.
Zip code based, right? Zip
exactly.
code based?
Yeah, zip code based. And what we see is, that again, it comes down to that composition of commercial and residential and how we're going to layer that into the territory. And so generally we're seeing and recommending ones and twos are probably your best starting point foundationally, because what we want to do is have enough of the market that you can have disproportionate market share over your competitors, right? That's critical in this industry. And then two, not have so much so as to reduce your route density, because route density really plays into the unit economics in a mobile service-based business like ours. So our territories are carved. You know, generally we're seeing ones and twos for the right demographic. For the right owner, a three might make sense, but those empire builders really can, you know, come in, start with what we see is they start with one job pod. Again, that's our fleet vehicle. They're adding their second vehicle inside that first year. That's kind of like on the
within the same territory.
Within the same territory, yeah. Okay. So to give you an idea of scope of the opportunity, so our corporate location has 165,000 total population. Couldn't find it on a map. It's called Kingston, Ontario. It happened to be where I lived, grew up, and started this business. 165,000 total population. We run 12 service vehicles in that population.
So this is obviously, I think based on what you're saying, I can read between the lines. You've got call center handles the calls. It's a vehicle based franchise. Do they have a physical location? Is there a physical business location?
Generally, when they get to that third vehicle, and this is all part about, you know, it's actually in the second bracket of our coaching, is like, we're going to start scouting, warehouse locations. So your team, because team culture really drives frontline execution, especially in home services. So, you know, as you get into that third vehicle, we're talking about, let's get, you know, a warehouse space or get some sort of space where your team can meet every day. And then you can build the foundation of your fourth, fifth, sixth vehicle off that. But the way that it works from like a unit economics perspective is the entire goal is get that first vehicle, get your doors open and get it to capacity. We measure your capacity in 4-week increments. And so once you're at 80% of capacity, your 4-week timer's clicking and we're watching that inflow of customers. And once we realize that this demand is calling for our next vehicle, we try to get that next vehicle process built out and into your business at the exact moment when you overclock your capacity on the first vehicle, and we begin that process again, and we continue to build through the job pods as your business grows so that you don't end up with too much capacity because that's expensive, or too many physical assets that you may not need. So really, we're really careful about how we focus on the per truck economics and how those build into the unit economics for the entire territory.
In home services, what would you say is your best way to market? What is your best referral sources? What is it? Is it through other home service companies? Is it through social media, digital media, combination thereof? I mean, you've been doing this a long time. Mm-hmm. What would you say?
I have a few. I have two answers for two different scenarios. I would say, first and foremost, it is digital media. And that is priming the pump. And in conjunction with the digital media, there is a ground game element that we coach to. And this is part of, you know, this is part of the recipe. And one is not kind of, it's not allowed to drift from the other because you need both. So local presence.
Well, they work together,
yeah,
right?
Local PR, and then that digital media. We all know how Google works and Facebook works. And at key points in the season, really clear messaging around the need drives a ton of activity. So we're talking spring breaks, you know, it's the first week of April, that's bluebird skies. You're looking out over, you know, your backyard and your windows are filthy. When you have that moment as a person, we want you to open Facebook and see Sparkle Squad can solve that problem for you.
So that you can be top of mind
exactly.
In the right time. Yeah.
And so like that's really critical, but that's kind of the pool that everybody gets to play in, and you're buying impressions. So we back it up with a big ground game PR push, get into your market. One of the first things we do when we go into a new market is we go and wash the windows in all the charities. That's how we train our technicians. And it's like, how do you institute yourself into the fabric of your market?
You just go do it for free. You just go wash their windows.
We got to practice anyway, right? You're a new owner.
That's so smart.
Yeah. And so what it does is it creates a snowball of like positive affirmation around your business in the community. And then when that digital ad pops up, and maybe one of your competitors' digital ads pops up, you know, on the next scroll that the homeowner does, we have like created this ground game flywheel that complements what we're doing online. And that's, I would say, the biggest marketing strategy that we lean into is doing good things for the right reason is always going to deliver. It's never not delivered. We did this thing here in Kingston in 2015 for the first time. We've done it every year since, where you may have even seen it. It's like, GE made an ad based on it. We washed the windows on the pediatric hospital dressed as superheroes, and it went absolutely viral globally.
I did see that.
It's no surprise.
Yes.
It went global. I mean, we were interviewed on like the Sydney Herald. We were on the cover of the Rio paper the day before the opening ceremony.
Who came up with that idea?
We were just washing it. I don't even remember. It was like the guy from had the contract for the hospital, myself, we were talking, and we were talking about how funny it is to see the people's reactions, and somehow it led to like, well, why don't we like And we've done it every year since.
So obviously. People think they're superheroes on the sides of the building.
Like the kids just like it, it's actually like, I'm going to get a little misty here saying this, but the first few years I was still on the tools while I was building this. And I would go first 2 years, I would go and be a part of this. And when you rappel down the side of the building and you literally see a kid in traction, forget he's in traction. Like I can't even say this without like tripping up.
I mean, their eyes are just like,
dude, it is like the most incredible.
That's brilliant. I mean, that's really smart.
So yeah, the whole business is just kind of built around, like when it comes to marketing, it's like, well, what can we give if we want to get? Like this is a reciprocal.
Well, and it's true help. I mean, you're helping people, and you go in, you go to the, whether it's, you know, the churches, nonprofits, local community, mm-hmm. you're doing good things. You're saying, hey, you know, let us just help you out here. Yeah, mm-hmm. certainly you want your end game there is you want them to think of you when mm-hmm. they need services again, or recommend you,
or talk to their friends, or we've had it land on the front page of the paper on a slow news day that this new business opened up and they're cleaning charities, and it's just like bang, you know, the all of a sudden that just bolsters everything else we do. So that's kind of our two. It's our core strategy. There's obviously, you know, you say secret sauce. There's things layered in there that we do to like help get these markets going. But our whole goal when we launch a market is that vehicle is at capacity by the first month of operation. You're running at full steam, and, you know, then we're focusing on getting that commercial vertical, getting that next vehicle, continuing to grow the business. So, yeah.
Well, listen, Chris, this has been so enjoyable to talk to you. I mean, if somebody's interested to learn more, where should they go? I mean, should they reach out to you or somebody on your team?
You know, you can go to elitewindowcleaningfranchising.com or sparklesquadfranchising.com. Quick Google search. You can find me on LinkedIn. However you want, send a pigeon. We're always happy to talk. And like, if anybody's taking anything away from this, is we're looking for empire builders to change this industry in North America forever. And if what I've said, or it, you know, something you've read on the internet, leads you to believe that this might be a good fit for you, it was for me, and I'd love to have a conversation.
Well, the wait was worth it. It was great talking to you. We should circle back, you know, maybe at the end of 2024, if not sooner. And I'd love to hear sort of an update on your growth and how it's been going.
I'd love that, Josh. I would love that. That'd be great.
All right. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks so much, man.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Franchise Euphoria. If you'd like to get a hold of me or learn more about our franchise services, please go to indyfranchiselaw.com. That's indyfranchiselaw.com. Also, please know that the conversations and information shared on this podcast are for educational purposes only and should not be construed as legal advice. Until next time, happy franchising.